up, ladies and gentlemen? I appreciate everybody coming out here. We'll start off the call to order and then acceptance of the minutes. I'll combine them with the approval of the agenda. Do you have a motion to accept the minutes in the agenda?
Move we accept.
Thank you, Roger. And a second?
I'll second that.
Thanks, Ron. And any discussion? Oh, did you want to say something? Okay. All right. Then all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, our next meeting will be October 24th back at the BATC.
Can you just make sure you're speaking into the microphones? We're recording with this microphone, and so it's really important that you speak into the microphones. You kind of have to eat them, so eat the microphone.
That will sound good. Okay. Is there any questions or comments from the board? Okay, then we'll start off with Deborah Smith. She is director for the Bragg Senior Companion Program. We heard from her at executive meeting, and it's a really neat program. So, you'd like to share with us?
Where do I sit or stand?
There's a podium in my desk.
Oh, thank you.
And make sure you get real close to the microphone.
Thank you. I'm very good at this. Thank you for letting me come to speak tonight. I have the privilege of being the director of the Senior Companion Program through Bragg. I am over three counties, Fox Elder, Cache, and Rich counties, but my program is very unique in that we have elderly people in our communities who live below the poverty line, but with my program, they are able to come and become a volunteer. They get a small stipend of $2.65 an hour and 35 cents a mile, and we also will reimburse them $2 towards meals. And my average age of my volunteer is 74 years old. And they go into other elderly people's homes. It's really a wonderful program. I get to meet each one of the clients that we serve. There's no cost to the clients. We have five clients currently right now that are completely blind. We take them to the grocery store, the doctor, the pharmacy. I apologize, I made it sound like we only have five clients. We actually see 96 clients a week. And five of those 96 clients are completely blind. But they do not have to go to a long-term care facility. They're able to stay in the home and help with their families. But my volunteer goes in one day a week. We visit with them. We take them to the pharmacy, the bank, the doctor. We even take their little poodles. They get groomed. We are a companion to them. It's like the best thing in the world. Now, with the current cuts and things to our programs, my grant is roughly $70,000, and my gasoline bill is $32,000 a year, because we did 83,000 miles of service last year. And this is service where my volunteer goes to the door, gets the client, they go into their car, they go about their errands and their transportation, and then they bring them back home and store the door. And as you all know, once you lose your ability to drive, it changes your life drastically, your independence decreases. But also with our elderly, even though they have lovely families about them, and some of them do not, even with children, a number of times the older children, such as myself, my father passed away at 94, but I still had to work. I couldn't be there every day. They have their senior companion volunteer that comes and visits and stays, talks with them. They play cards with them. We read letters to them. They can reminisce together. I just can't say enough about what we're doing for the elderly population. So. Roger wanted me to come today to express to you our appreciation and gratitude that you would consider the transportation budget. I'm not really sure how it all works. I apologize. I'm just kind of winging it here. Thank you. If there was a possibility that any of those funds could be directed to the Senior Companion Program or even our aging department at Bragg, we would be on board. Grateful. The grant gives me roughly $6,995 a year for gas reimbursement. And as I said, last year my gas bill was $32,000, and I'm assuming it's going to be around $27,000 this year. So that's my presentation. If there's any questions, please ask, because I'm afraid I'm a bit nervous, and I'm sure I've gone really quickly and left out everything. And on the way home in the car, I'm sure I'll be very concerned about what I did not say. So if any of you have any questions, please feel free to ask.
Maybe I can give some context too about, and thank you. Roger had talked to me about this not too long ago, and if you recall, when we look at transportation for Cache Valley Transit, that's always been a fixed route bus that goes through the community or the paratransit van. But I think in our industry and Cache Valley as we grow, we need to look at other opportunities that whether we participate in giving some funding to an organization that's already doing something, whether we do the services directly ourselves, or whether we contract out with someone else to do that. There's all these opportunities, and I think we just wanted to have you come and talk, have Deborah come and talk to us about what they were doing. Is again, this is one of those opportunities that might exist out there in the future where we say, hey, you know, that makes sense maybe for us to give some money to this program or to partner in some way. And so we just wanted to have you come and explain that and have the board just hear and understand that might be an opportunity in the future.
And thank you very much for letting me come, because last year we saw 145 clients, 96 a week is roughly our average because some pass away or they go to be wound. But every dime goes directly to service, and it goes into gasoline. As you know, gasoline is $3.18 a gallon now, and my volunteers use their own car. So I do appreciate this opportunity. I absolutely love my volunteers and the clients we serve, and I promise the money will be going to something that's pretty significant, and that's our elderly population. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Deborah. Okay, we'll move on to Craig.
All right. So, if you've had a chance to look over the interpretation for 2.6, the results from our latest survey, you see that it was nearly unanimous that 2.6 was approved. Todd's interpretation was approved. So I will call for a motion. Sue, would you care to make a motion?
I'd be happy to. I move that we accept policy 2.6, Todd's interpretation of that.
I second.
Is there any discussion, comments, questions, concerns? Hearing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. That was simple. Thank you very much. Back to you.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate you moving along and digging into this stuff and making sure we go along. Ron, would you like to do it?
Yeah, we're getting to those areas of the policy manual where we've got 2.7, 2.8, 2.9, and they're only like one interpretation. So we're proposing that we do all three, 2.7, 2.8, 2.9, in one night. So sometime here at the end of this month, you'll be getting another, if I get it right, I don't want to call it the monkey survey, but it's the survey monkey. and hopefully it will go real quick. And then the last one we'll do in November, which will be 2.10. And so if you don't have a problem with that, then we'll go ahead with that. And it should go real quick. Be faster than what you've done in the past. And I really want to thank everyone for doing the survey. I know that I sent text messages out over the weekend, and I worry that there are five or six people that haven't taken it. But when I wake up Monday morning, I find people taking it like at 3 a.m. in the morning. I'm going, what are they doing up there? So I really appreciate everybody participating and helping out. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Okay, we'll move on now to Glenn and discuss the budget.
Okay, all I'm doing today is presenting the budget actual through June, the quarterly report. Everyone should have received that in their packet a couple of days ago, and so I'm guessing that everyone's had a chance to look at that. There's not a lot to talk about. One thing I'd like to point out is Curtis mentioned that the diesel fuel has been cost of that has gone up a bit for the year, and so they're keeping a close eye on that. They'll keep us apprised of any big changes there if there's any necessity to address that. That's the biggest thing. One question I had, Todd, was right at the bottom on the projects completed. Say there's one project completed. What is that project for, on the capital outlay? At the very bottom of the, on the...
Curtis, you want to address that?
Yeah, that project was actually windows out of the transit center.
Okay.
The south side windows were leaking.
Oh, that's right.
And so we had that. It's a project that actually was supposed to be done last year, but it carried over for this year. So that's the project that got done in January. So.
Great. So those are done and sealed up and keeping you warm now.
And dry. That's the most critical thing. We don't like moisture inside.
Oh, good. And so I didn't see much else. There's one other thing that you mentioned before is on the sales tax, that you thought that was running a little bit lower than what you had anticipated.
Just the, when we got the allocation for June, as we're building up our projections for this coming year, June actually came in lower than the prior year. And was significantly below what we were expecting to receive, so it's affected some of our projections as we're going forward into 2019. For the year, we're still okay for 2018. We think that we'll hit the, well, we know we'll hit the budget mark for that. We're not really concerned, but for 2019, it's definitely impacting our projections.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments?
I know in our April meeting, we got the letter from the U.S. Department of Transportation saying that we had some deficiencies. Is there any deficiencies in this report?
What do you mean by deficiency?
The letter just said deficiencies that you passed out to us.
You're talking about the triennial review? So
this wasn't a budget meeting?
No, that had nothing to do with the budget. That was all related to our triennial review and compliance with all the requirements. Those findings have all been resolved and cleared up with the FTA and to their satisfaction. A lot of it just related to policy issues that were anything for that were related to actual anything that would impact the financial standings. It was more addressing how we've written our policy related to call ride passengers. That was the biggest one. We had to revise our rider's guide. There was a procurement finding which we needed some more documentation. They wanted us to modify our policy to require more documentation, and then they wanted us to recalculate our DVE goal based off of a $40,000 contract, which had absolutely no impact on that DVE calculation, and region totally approved off on that. So all of those findings have been reviewed and satisfied to the satisfaction of the region office.
Anything else?
No questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Don't sit down, Curtis.
You're not. Okay, so we put together, as the board requested, they want to see information farther in advance. So we stepped up a full month in getting some ideas of where our budget's heading. Right now, it's too early to do any sort of projections relative to year end, and so you'll see that column's blank. When we come in October, we'll fill that column in with some of our projections as where we think we'll end up at the year end. The 2018 information is presented for comparison purposes, as well as our initial discussions of...
Just tell them what page number you're...
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm on page 20.
All the page numbers are on the bottom. Right of the packet.
Sorry, page 20 is what I'm referring to right now. We'll go back and cover 18 as well, so you might want to have those side by side. So in presenting this budget as the way it stands, we have not included any of the increase for the tax that the county added. We're estimating that that's probably going to come in somewhere right around $900,000 that would be attributable to the 2019 year. Once again, we're trying to get those projections a little bit tighter. The reason why we did not include that so far, and we talked to the budget committee about this, is we wanted to give you a comparison standpoint of how it stands now, so we're not trying to distort things. and then have a discussion and prep the board to where in October we can really start having a discussion of what should that additional money then be used for? What services should we go after? And we'll be providing information of some of the costs. When you see the three lines that are highlighted, as we're building up a schedule to where it's kind of a click-to-play type scenario, if you click a box, we'll put that scenario into play, into the budget, and be able to see the impact of what it hits. And generally, it's going to hit wages, supplies, and fuel. That's as we've analyzed where the primary points of the cost are going to come in. Those are the three areas that tend to be hit the most, and mostly it's fuel and wages, to be honest. There's a little bit of supplies that goes along with it. So as we develop this budget further, we're going to come to you for input as to what additions of service you'd like to see us use that money for. As you look through this budget, there's a few themes. I'm not going to focus a lot on specifics because at this point we're still weeding out some of those estimates to the year of what we think we're going to need. But there's a couple things that are popping up as we're doing this budget. The first is sales tax revenue. As Glenn mentioned, June came in lower. At this point, we've put our increase for the next year for 3%.
And this is on page 18.
This is back on page 18. So we're projecting a 4% increase through the end of the year. That's consistent with where we're at right now. We're hoping that status stays. We'll be monitoring that. And then for next year, we plan just a 3% increase. Initially, we were thinking maybe we could go a little bit more, but June's got me hesitant, so we'll have a little bit more information. We'll be fine-tuning that sales tax number all the way through to the final budget. Normally by the tentative budget, we're pretty confident that that'll be November. Remember, November, we adopted tentative budget, then the final budget will be adopted sometime in December. So we'll be tweaking sales tax as we go along. The federal grants, the way this is designed, is to keep our operating funds, so our operating federal grants, about equal with the prior year. What we're trying to do is not increase our dependency on federal funds for operations, federal and state. Now, when we say state, just to be clear with everybody in here, the state in and of itself does not give us any money. That money that comes through state grants is actually federal grants that are required to flow through the state. And so I label it as federal and state grants, but really it's all federal money. We're trying to keep our dependency level as constant as we can between years. And you'll see we've kept it within $20,000. The other thing that goes along, interest income. If you haven't noticed, interest rates are rising. And in your bank account, you probably don't see it, but where we're investing our money with the state treasurer's office, we've actually seen that rate go from 1.25 to 2.5%. So our interest is increasing quite a bit. That rate has doubled, plus our amount on hand, because we were saving up for the building and possible future bus purchases. That amount on hand is growing, and so we're able to generate, we project for next year somewhere close to about $125,000. So it's gone from being insignificant. That budget line used to be about $10,000 to $20,000, and now it's up to the $125,000. So that's really helping. We're just trying to set that, be able to be wise stewards of that money as we're going forward. Now we get into the key area, the expenses. And really, this is what a budget's for, is to control expenses. And I will say that there's many times when we're doing revenue projections, we'll actually bring those in a little bit lower because then, or have our estimates very conservative because then the expenses aren't allowed to grow astronomically. We really focus on controlling our expenses quite a bit. However, there's one issue that Todd sent out a memo to you, I know, and that was included on page 21, but we're hitting a point where a critical mass. We talked about this over the summer. But our number of drivers right now stands at 65 or 66? 66. In any other point in time, or in any other year at this point in time, we'd be closer to 76 to 85 drivers, somewhere in that range. So we're about 10 drivers short of where we should be. What that's doing is we're having shifts that we're filling on the very day that the bus is running. And when I say shifts, we're not talking about one or two, we're talking about 6 to 8 shifts. So we can handle 1 to 2, we can handle 3. Jody gets upset when I say we can handle 4, but we can handle 4. When we hit 6 to 8, now we've got stress in our system. We're hitting the point where operation supervisors are going out and driving. We're having dispatchers leaving to go drive. It's basically all hands on deck. We're getting to the point where we're canceling PTO requests or denying PTO requests because we don't have enough drivers to fill the shifts. We've been analyzing this. We've been all the way through our data again. We've gone through and surveyed people who are leaving. We've gone through and surveyed people that are sticking around. The number one factor, there's a couple factors that drive this. We have our part-time crew and we have our full-time crew. Our part-time, they're taking jobs where they can make another buck or 50 cents more than what they can drive. And so they're taking that work over our work. When it comes to full-time people, they're feeling the effect of the increasing cost of goods. We've seen fuel stay up at a higher level than it's been in the past. We're seeing some of those effects. And while we're able to get them to work overtime, there's still a challenge there that we can't get new drivers in the door to start filling some of those shifts, and that's where it comes down to. Our full-time drivers really value their benefits. They absolutely consider those critical as a part of their conversation based off of the numbers that we've interviewed. It's the problem of getting new drivers in the door. Walmart right now is hiring at $11 an hour. We've got numerous places around that are like Thermo Fisher for frontline people, Casper's. They're up in that $12 range. So they're as competitive as us. And yet we're requiring people to, instead of just sticking a popsicle stick in a machine or drive a forklift around, we're asking them to drive a $400,000+ bus and deal with people. And so we're out of market. Every study that we've done, we talked to you about where Logan City starts their CDL drivers at, which is below ends 15, plus $15.60 an hour. Other cities are paying even more than that. The garbage truck drivers from the 15.60.
15.60, and let's get there new. If they have a year's worth of experience, they'll start at 16.60.
Yeah, so 16.60 for a year's worth of experience. That's just for garbage truck. But if they're a different type of CDL driver, they're actually going up for $18+ per hour. So what we're finding is we're challenged in the market this way. And so what we're proposing, and what this budget actually reflects, is for our entry level wage for the driver. So this would be what we bump the entry level through to, would be up $2 per hour. That cost is about $200,000 for the entire year. A good way to measure this is every dollar per hour for that driver increases about $100,000. So, in addition, we've got our benefit packet came in with the preliminary rates. We're still trying to finalize that. We didn't have that number when we built this budget. This budget was built with a 10% increase in the health insurance rates. Unfortunately, our packet came in right at that. So we're still trying to do some tweaks, see what else we can do, but this budget as it's presented includes a benefit adjustment to absorb all of that. That's what we're proposing and being able to fit within this budget. That cost come with market increases to wages as well. If you take that, if you take the $2 segment out of the wages and benefits, the rest of the benefit adjustment comes in right close to 5%, just a little bit over 5%, which is consistent with what other entities in the valleys are doing as far as their increase overall just to wages. Many times Logan City did a 5% across the board increase to their wages alone. So we feel like this is keeping things right in line on that standpoint. The next theme that's built into this budget, we've talked a lot about a marketing effort. We feel like we're getting out marketed. We don't feel like we're getting the outreach that we should. And so, as you know, we contracted with a marketing firm. They came through with an initial budget to us of about $500,000. So we don't think that's practical. So we went back and asked them to do a revision. What we've proposed is using $200,000 to bump up their marketing efforts. That's what they would be doing. And then correspondingly, we would reduce what we spend internally for marketing by about $44,000. So the net comes in about $156,000 that we would be increasing for marketing just to get out there. A lot of different medias. We'd be using Pandora, YouTube, beef up our radio ads, have them a little bit more professionally done, beef up and actually do a couple television ads. And there's a whole scheme of what they're doing. We've actually asked them to come and present their concept, their ideas of what they can do in the October board meeting. So you'll see them on the agenda to come and present that. But this budget actually includes that increase to the marketing budget so that we can get the Cache Valley awareness out, especially as it relates to a lot of the college students or younger adults, and make sure that they understand the services that we're offering. And then the last thing that's in this budget has to do with fuel. As we mentioned, the price of fuel actually went down just in the last few days, but it's been hovering right around $2.90 all the way through August and first part of September. We budgeted $2.50 for this year. Fortunately, the first part of the year, we were fairly low, and so we think we'll make it through this year. As we looked at what we might need to budget for the next year, we put in $3 per gallon. Now, obviously, we're going to watch that as we come in closer to the end of the year. We might fine-tune that, but right now, this budget, it has about $104,000 increase to go from $2.50 per gallon up to $3 per gallon on our fuel. So those are the main themes. What I'm looking for, what we're looking for here is to see if, based off of these ideas, are there, we'd like to have an open dialogue, have a discussion. What concerns you have, what are we heading in the right course of what this board is looking for? Are there things we should be adjusting? So when we come back in October, we can present a finer picture and really fine tune this down. We'll go a lot more in depth on some of the individual lines at that point, but we'll fine tune those down as well. But basic theme, basic ideas, concerns, questions, comments, but turn back to the chair.
Does anyone have any comments? Jeff?
No, Eric Ashcroft is out of town right now. We're able to come, but he called me and asked me to ask a couple of questions. And the first one is in regards to that increase in the wages to the drivers. He said that he was looking at USU and their wages are between $9 an hour starting out, and he said that they're fully staffed. And he says he doesn't understand why USU can get bus drivers, but CDPD cannot. And the second question he had was, has to do with advertising jobs. He says he doesn't see any advertising in the transit center or on the buses or any place like that, so it doesn't see that their jobs are advertised. So maybe you could respond to those two questions.
Can I take the first one?
Yes.
I actually have a meeting once a month with the director of Aggie Show. We actually just met this last Tuesday. And it's a question I'm not just asking Aggie Show. I ask every employer I come in contact with. Curtis and I were just having lunch the other day talking about something and this issue, and And I saw a friend that runs a cabin shop. I asked him the same question. But with regards to Ag and Shuttle, I don't know who he's talking to, but the director said that they're not fully staffed. They're just like us. They're just trying to meet service. He's very concerned about, and we both talked about, we said, man, how do we develop an employee sharing program or something? But we train differently, it just doesn't work. But so I'd like to know who Eric's talking to with regards to that, because the director doesn't feel that way. What was the second question? Sorry.
It had to do with
advertising. I'll let Nicole and Curtis talk about that.
Well, as far as advertising for our positions, as far as that we're hiring?
Yes.
That is one area where we are trying to expand out where we're actually advertising to. And so there's a lot of times where we're advertising on Facebook. We have chosen not to advertise specifically on the buses. We actually saw something when we went down to Flagstaff. We went down to Flagstaff to understand their system. They actually had some little handouts that you could rip off of a little zip tie and take. And we asked them how effective that was. And they said, we haven't gotten a single referral off of that at all. And it has a single applicant or a referral off of that program. So we thought it was kind of ingenious until we heard, yeah, people just pull them off. They end up being scattered on the bus. They end up cleaning up mess, and we don't get anything off of it. So we actually backed off of that idea. As far as advertising on the outside of the bus or doing anything like that, we would have to actually pay for the laminate for putting that, and we think that we can do more effective advertising with those dollars for getting candidates. We are out on Indeed as well, and which other one?
I do all the major employment websites like Indeed, Monster, Glassdoor, all those things when we're post. We also post on our Facebook or Twitter. We have it on our website. We don't do media blasts for hiring because it's just frankly not in the budget for us to be spending a lot of money to, you know, do radio ads for hiring or anything like that. So we work within the confines of what we have, and we try to work within a pretty small budget for marketing for positions.
I looked this morning. I didn't see it on Indeed or KSL or even Workforce Service.
I don't post them and have them continually running because they get stale. I open them for a couple of weeks. We collect applications for that time, then we do a hiring class, and then I close it at that time so that the position itself doesn't get stale and that the posting doesn't get buried. When you put it new, it'll come up to the top, it'll send it out as a new hire every single time to people who are subscribed to those services. I also put it on Workforce Services, LDS Employment Services. I put it on all of the major ones. And so when you close them after a period of time and you reopen it, it shoots out as a new thing. So people get different alerts.
Also, we currently have a $1,500 sign-on bonus and a $750 employee referral program. So the sign-on bonus, you have to make it through training to get the first pay, then make it through 4 months or a bid for the next, and then another 4 months. But that really hasn't moved the needle for us on getting the applicants in. And again, Nicole, she interviews the folks about why they're taking a different job. I mean, and you can speak to that if you want. I mean, we've done a lot of research on this.
Loyalty to employers anymore. They're just taking what they get. And the training process for us takes a long time. It is a long process to teach someone how to safely drive a bus and transport people, because that's what business we're in, is transporting people. And so the process takes a lot longer than just calling Kelly Temp Service and getting somebody in that can do a job that they can show them how to do in 3 or 4 hours. So it is a little bit different of a struggle for us.
Yeah, cool question. You mentioned a $2 raise.
That's it.
Yeah, go ahead. The $2 raise, is that going from, I didn't hear the starting salary, starting wage to the next level?
So our starting wage for an entry-level driver is $12 per hour. So this would take the entry-level position up to 14. So when you compare that to like a Walmart or something like that, that puts us back in that range where we want to be $2 to $3 ahead of at least the Walmart.
Well, again, we're looking at people that are CDL drivers. They have gone out and got their CDL. They have to have air brake endorsement, passenger endorsement. And we're not talking about someone that's just, you know, putting sticks in a thing.
They're
trained professionals.
They're professional people who are highly trained to do a very specific job, but they have to do it very safely every single day. There's not just the people that they're transporting on the bus. There's all the other people that they're driving around, too, that, you know, they have to be responsible for. So it's a different level of what the type of employee that we're trying to get, because we're trying to hire professionals.
What kind of employee are you looking for? Like when we're out and about in the community and knowing people that may be interested, what makes a good candidate?
Usually what I'm looking for is someone who comes in who presents themselves well, who's professional in the way that they speak. We ask them questions about how they handle stress, how they handle things that are typical or untypical to their usual day, how they deal with the public, what kind of customer service background that they may have, and then of course we look into what kind of safety background they have. If they have any specific training, if they have already driven CDL, they've already driven professionally in some way. That's kind of what we're looking for.
So a high school graduate, probably.
They have to be 21 years of age or older to get a CDL license.
Okay, so 21.
Yes.
And a good driving record, obviously.
Good driving record, yes. You can
go with people, and that would qualify. That would.
But you can't have more than 3 citations in a 2-year period. Mm-hmm. So that's an automatic disqualifier if you do. There's also certain types of citations that are also qualifiers like DUIs, of course, reckless driving, cell phone violations while you're driving. Cell phone citations are also ones that we would be automatic disqualifiers.
He hasn't passed a criminal background check, drug screen. So yes. I mean, there are quite a few things that you have to get through.
If the university is also looking for drivers, if they're short, are we getting to a point where we may have to offer help to get CDLs?
When it comes to CDLs, we actually do the training for them to become a CDL. That's part of our training program.
We do that already.
We do. Yeah, we do all the training. We provide the bus for them to actually train in and get them ready before they can pass both their written and their driving portion of the CDL. We actually conduct the driving portion of the CDL. We have a tester. The written portion they have to take through the state.
So what does it cost to train an employee?
Each employee is about $2,800.
$2,800?
Yes, and that's just to get them through training. And so when we get an employee in which we hire and they don't stay, you know, for very long, it's hard. The retention rate is really difficult.
Do you have a hard time finding full-time employees? Or are you mainly just talking about
hiring? We don't hire for full-time. So the way our process works is we only hire for part-time. We don't open outside to full-time. We do, based on seniority and some other factors, we promote people up to full-time. We haven't tried to hire full-time employees from outside yet. I would imagine that it would drastically change the way our application pool is at the moment. Because we'll post right now, and we're getting somewhere between 7 to 12 applications is all, and I'm trying to fill 10 to 15 positions.
But when it comes to full-time, Norm, as Nicole said, we look at seniority and some other factors. We're not having a problem getting our drivers that are part-time to take the full-time position.
Right.
And Curtis didn't mention this, but in we're also looking at not just the $2 increase, but also adding 4 full-time shifts to help stabilize that, because again, a full-time shift we can schedule, and that's what people are wanting, right? They're wanting full-time work. So it's really a two-pronged effect there.
So what's the cost difference between a part-time employee and a full-time employee?
I don't have that.
I thought you said about $28,000.
Yeah, it's about $28,000.
So if we lowered benefits, that would change that?
That sure can change it, yes.
And then that would offset how many people come in and apply?
I don't know for sure. This is just a theory that I have.
But your part-time drivers want to go to full-time.
We do have quite a few that do. We do have a bulk of our part-time staff that likes to stay part-time. They're retired. They're students. They've got, you know, other things going on in their life. But at the time, full-time work isn't what they can handle at the time. But those people that are looking for full-time, that are trying to manage 2 or 3 part-time jobs to get to a full-time position so that they only have to worry about that one job, when we offer it to people, they're taking it right away.
It's Nicole, I just mentioned that I work at Utah State Parking and Transportation, and I agree with what Todd mentioned. James and I, the directors, is very concerned. Alden Erickson is the supervisor of our shuttle program, and he is struggling to get qualified applicants and keep them. His washout rate is high as well. We're experiencing the same issues you are.
I know that we have hired recently, within the last 9 months, I have hired several of Utah State's bus drivers.
And because the wages are higher, they're making that shift.
And then they all, you know, it's a different environment from what, you know, Utah State provides as far as safety goes also in training. So when they come over to us, you know, it starts with the wage, but then they end up, you know, different. But also too, you know, our part-time turnover rate is rising. But our full-time turnover rate is significantly low. We really don't have a significant turnover rate in our full-time drivers, or people are choosing to leave us.
So can we do a refresher for some of the new ones, like on the, from 2017 to 2018, the budget difference? Because we kind of talked about just this, we increased it 400,000, and one of the things that we did address was to do incentive pool for part-time drivers. Maybe you can tell us what we did on that.
For the incentive pool?
Well, just because I know I hit this with a dead horse last time, but we increased our budget from 17 to this budget, from 16 to 17, where we're at now.
Yeah, so some of the incentives we tried to do was a shift benefit to where if employees would sign up and fill an entire shift, this was driven at part-time people trying to help them consider working more shifts for us. So if they took a bid, they fulfilled all the hours in that bid, they could earn up to $1 per hour for all the hours in that bid for the entire bid process, which is, there's 3 bids, so it's about 4 months. That actually didn't work. We had about 4 people that really benefited from it, a few others that got a little bit, but it didn't. What we did see was an increase in people actually taking bids, which was the driving factor. And so that program, we basically eliminated with this last bid that just went out. The other incentive that we were working on is a safety incentive. And that's driven around putting money into a safety pool. And then at the end of a 6-month period, basically, that we allocate that out to people that started in May, is when we've got that program totally in place. The first payout will come in the first payroll in December, where the people will see that. So far, that program's been, looks like it has some effectiveness. We'll continue to evaluate, but that one's a continuing on going safety program. But we only got that installed halfway through the year, just for various reasons of trying to get all the complexities worked out with it. Right now, the pool's building up and is starting to get some interest from the drivers, so they could each, they'll each get an allocation of that pool based off of the number of hours they actually work. So once again, it's incentivizing people to work and take shifts. If they don't work, they don't get to take part of the pool. So that one's still in place, and that's the more significant part of that incentive pool that we put together.
Maybe I can just say one thing with regards to incentives. I've always been a big believer in incentives. I believe in rewarding people for what they do. The things have changed a little bit, though, to where because our unemployment rate's 2.8%, because everyone's got, and again, I would ask you, just look around at employers, talk to people. Everyone's got help wanted signs up, right? Because the market's so competitive right now, someone's saying, well, I can make $12 with you, and yeah, I'll get an extra dollar an hour if I work, but I'm going to make $15 an hour for this guy, and I don't have to do anything. They just want me in the door. That's what we're competing against, and we are competing. There's no set of employees that say, hey, I just want to work for the transit district, so we don't have any competitors. We're competing against the private sector. We're competing against other cities. And so that's the challenge we face, and that's where incentives have really, in our experience, at least in this last year, the incentives really haven't done anything. People want their pay, and they want it right now. So that's what we're trying to do, is to adjust to that.
What would be the advantages of hiring more full-time people and having less part-time? What is the disadvantage?
So the way that we're considering structuring these new full-time positions in the past, I'm going to go back to the past, we've structured and had a specific set time frame that they would work in. So they would know their shift would be 6 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Or something along those lines. What we're finding is in some employers are finding some really effective strategies in doing what we call an onboard position, or it's more of a flexible shift position, where the person's guaranteed full-time hours, but that's going to be set more on a week-by-week basis. And so as the shifts are available, these full-time people would be coming up, and they don't have a specific shift that they're responsible for. They would be plugged into specific areas where we can't, where we're having difficulty filling those shifts. And so what it does is it allows the part-time people to fill some of those that are easier for them to fill, and allows us to use these full-time people to plug into the more difficult time frames to fill. And that's their entry step into finally getting into a shift later on if something opens up as somebody rotates out or moves on. And so a lot of agencies have found this strategy to be very successful, and we've shied away from it. We tend to value giving people advance notice, but we're finding this may be exactly what we need in order to satisfy the challenges that we're facing right now.
So the hiring more full-time and less part-time, is this too expensive, or do you want to hire 10 more full-time or 20 more full-time?
Well, right now we're gearing for 4, and we're still going to try and keep our part-time pool and grow that. We think that if we get the 2, it's a multi-pronged approach. We can't consider we're doing one or the other. This is a multi-pronged approach that we're actually proposing here, in the fact that we would come and be able to attract more people into working some of the more difficult shifts to fill by offering them full-time, but then increasing the wage so that we can attract some people into those part-time shifts and increase the pool that we have to be able to fill those other ones. Otherwise, our other option would be to just go for more full-time people, but we're trying to balance this out and be fiscally conservative by taking a balanced approach. We think we could be more conservative of nature and try and keep the wage base a little bit lower while still gaining that flexibility that we need to fill those difficult shift times.
The reason I asked it was because you don't have any problem with full-time positions. And so
no, in full-time positions and our full-time employees stabilize our bid. They stabilize our service. They're professional. They're doing this every single day. They're out there. They're the ones that are kind of the face of what we do. And so the full-time positions are the ones that are stabilizing what it is and filling the service and making sure that service gets out there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
questions?
I just changed the subject. On your sheet here, you have, you mentioned marketing was up, but your marketing budget is 13,000, proposed for 19. Did you put the marketing under professional fees, which has gone up almost 150,000?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to explain, is we decreased what internally we're spending on marketing by 44,000. But we're increasing the professional fees because we're going to put this out to a professional firm. Rather than us trying to do it ourselves, we're not professional in marketing. We're finding that out. And so by moving and adding those professional fees, the net increase overall to the budget is about just a little bit over $150,000. But we are allocating the theme of this budget would allocate $200,000 to this marketing firm to use their professional mechanisms to get us a more visual presence, well, more of a presence out there via all age groups.
I think just
are we losing an employee then? Because so if somebody's doing this job now, are they losing their job to hire this firm?
No, we're alternate. I'm chief over marketing right now. I mean, I'm not a marketing person, right? If you remember, we had the director of operations. That was one of his main roles. We did away with that position. We over the years, we've done away with a lot of positions. And so we just have to next man up who's going to take that role. So that's why we're saying, look, it's time that we need to look at professionals to do this. Really, we have a four-pronged approach of things we want to do. We want to market to the value of CBTD. Because it's not just moving people around. There's a lot of other things that we do. We're extra eyes and ears in the community. We help with crime. I mean, we just had the police department in today saying, hey, we need to get this camera footage off of this facility because we think there's something going on. So we're working with them constantly. So there's all these additional features that the district does that we want to get out and we want to help the community. So just the voter as one specific group we want to target, help them understand the value beyond just moving people around. The writer is another group that we want to talk about. The elected official is another group that we want to target. And then we have our own employees that we want to target. So there's these people, and they have different messages, different needs that we want to get out and help them understand overall what is the value that CBTD brings to the communities it serves. And so that's part of what we're wanting to do with this firm. It's not just about getting writers, although that's definitely part of it, but it's also about educating the community.
So that's a portion of it. What's the, so it's 535,000, so how much again was on that? What's the rest of it?
What's 535,000?
The professional fees.
The professional fees.
So the, I have to dig back into my notes. Inside of that, there's going to be legal fees that are built into there. There's the marketing that's in there. Let's see, the other piece that's in there is the law enforcement contract. So we contract with the county for providing basically a deputy full-time equivalent to us. There's audit fees.
If that's a question, we can come back and address that.
Yeah, we're gonna go into that.
So I think we'll send those questions.
Are just straight across, from the prior year. We're talking about more about with the increase, but we'll go back. We can prepare to detail out more what those professional fees are.
Is there other areas, Norm? So professional fees is one area. Is there other areas that you want to?
If you have some others, Norm, maybe you could send Todd or Curtis an email and they can look into that for you.
Fair enough, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions?
I guess what I'd like to see from the board, are we heading in the right direction? Are there concerns? Are there areas where you think we should be detailing more time? I appreciate Norm. We'll go into professional fees, but are there other areas or things where the board would like us to come prepared to, or do these look like good themes to be going after?
At some point, Curtis, I'm wondering if it would be a benefit to newer members of the board. We have property on, 31st North, somewhere in that have for that, and what our most optimistic situation is.
I think Todd's actually going to test.
I'm going to talk a little bit about that tonight.
All right, good.
Can I ask a question? Do you have any way of knowing what the projected rate of return might be on this marketing fee? Like, if we are putting this much into it, do we have any idea, like, what ridership, increase in ridership will put us in better limelight for government funding? Or those of us that are new, how does this translate into positivity for the district?
Sure. And that's one of the reasons why we selected the firm that we did is they actually, and like I said, we've invited them to come in October to kind of present more. But one of the things that their proposal indicated is they would actually give us specific feedbacks of like number of hits that they're getting through their ads. So we don't, there's a lot more statistical analysis. We haven't been doing that. So they're going to track like web hits. How many people click on something but actually then follow it through to another section? And so we can track our traffic and see what are people actually interested in, so we can actually focus and get better information out there to people, which I think is what drives much of the decision-making process, is how easy is it to navigate through websites. We can monitor it for like Pandora and YouTube hits, how many people not just see the ads but actually click on them and click through. And so we'll have a lot more analysis of how the marketing is actually getting out to people. Then we're able to track ridership and other factors of things that we monitor. We'll track that internally. We're not going to turn that over to another firm. But the statistical analysis of is the advertising being effective, is it reaching people, we'll actually be able to have more detail on that than what we currently, we don't even track it.
So, Cecilia, I think that's a great question. What I would encourage, because we are going to have them come up next month, if you have specific questions like that, which I think that's awesome, what's going to be the return for this investment? Because it's a huge investment. Let's be honest.
It's a
big chunk, right? That's a lot of money. And so we don't propose that lightly. I think any questions you have, that's great. And then we can have them specifically address those. So I think this is a great question. We'll make sure that they come prepared to address that. But if there are other questions, please email me so that we can have them prepared to address them. Because I think that's fair.
Is there any place in here that addresses the number one request from people, and that is that we get internet on the buses? Is that even in the distant future as far as...
So when we were in Flagstaff at the Sun Conference, so again, if you remember, it's the small urban network, so there's 200 members in that group. We probably had about 120 folks that showed up representing agencies. One of the things we did is we broke out, we talked about other things. One of the areas was technology, and so we were asking everybody about internet on the buses, and hardly anyone's moving to that. I was surprised. I thought that there would be more people, so we're reevaluating that right now. What we found was when the trip length is significant, and I would say 40 minutes, 45 minutes, then it makes sense for people because then they can work. But if the trip length is short, you know, and you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, yeah, then people really aren't looking for that.
And the only one we really have is to Preston.
Correct.
And that, because I know the University of Utah and BYU have both utilized that, and that was one of the reasons, and they're packed because students can do their
And we still, Park City's invested heavily in that. But they've invested heavily as a community. They have
money.
They have a different resource than we do, right? So again, it's one of those things that just cost us a pause. We're saying we need to do some more evaluation. We need to understand, because these guys will tell you, I was all on board. We got to get that. This really caused me to pause and step back and say, maybe we need to do a little bit more research and just really understand what that is.
And there's been a shift in the data packages that are being offered by the cell phone providers. So in the last 2 years, you went from monitored data to unlimited data. And so people have less incentive to go to a Wi-Fi when they can just stay right on the data and it doesn't do anything for them. And then they don't have to break free from the Wi-Fi to go back over on the data if they go walking away.
Technology is a tough thing because it moves all the time.
I just didn't know software were into that at all.
Oh, again, please give us questions. I recognize $200,000 for marketing is a big ask. And so that's why we're putting it out there and saying, hey, what do you guys think? And it may be too much. We recognize that it may be too much. But so please, the firm's going to come up here. Let's ask them the questions.
Curtis, I said, from listening to the conversation, I think you're heading in the right direction. I think what the plans you've got here, we've got to increase ridership, we've got to, you know, and I think what we're going about there, we need to retain our staff, we need to retain the drivers, and I think that's value, they're a valuable asset. When it comes to technology, I had a colleague of mine that I worked with when I first got into this business, and he was a tool and die maker for a company called Marchant in Oakland, California, and they made the old calculators, you know, they went like that. He said they were out of business overnight when the transistor came out. Mm-hmm. He's literally overnight. He got his work for them on Thursday. Friday, he got his pink slip. And they shut the whole business down thanks to a transistor. So the technology can change, but I think we're headed in the right direction.
I would just say I agree with Ron, but my question is it enough? Are you going to have to come back in 6 months and say we're going to need more because of the way the economy is and so forth? That would be the concern I would have.
Are you talking about wages?
Enough, right, on the wages.
And that's what we're trying to balance out, because like I said, Logan City hires their governorship governor at $15.60. If they've got a year of experience, it's $16.60. Once again, we're trying this two-prong approach. We're proposing this two-prong approach, and trying to balance the benefits that we're offering with some wage increase, and trying to make that balance. Now, we can obviously shift that. We might want to structure some benefits differently and raise wages so we can attract more part-time people in. We're evaluating a lot of different options that way. What we stepped back to and said, this is a pretty good compromise to where we can keep our full-time people happy because they value the benefits while raising the wage and hopefully being able to attract those part-time people. Is there a guarantee there? Not quite sure. And that's why, you know, if you want us to explore different options of benefit adjustments and wage adjustments, or if you want us to explore just wage adjustments, we can. Like, I try to put numbers in there to kind of put it in perspective. Every dollar an hour we increase on the wage is worth about $100,000 or so. And we have to be careful with how certain things adjust because our dispatchers and certain other positions start coming into play as we adjust that wage. And so we're trying to do a balancing act so we don't shift something else to where we put more fiscal pressure on the district. But it's a great question. And I would love to be able to say that we won't be back in 6 months or back in a year saying we need a wage increase, but if the unemployment rate drops down to 2.5, for those who don't know, in the United States, 5% is considered full employment. So when you talk about us functioning at 2.8%, 2.9%, even if it's 3%, we're 2 full percentage points below what is statistically considered full employment. So that's why you see signs in many locations around town saying we're hiring. And like I said, we use a few benchmarks to try and keep us somewhat in that range. We know we're lower than other people, but we think we offer a better environment. We don't require people to clean up the garbage trucks. So, you know, that would have an advantage. You know, but they do deal with puke, and they deal with a few people that are a little bit belligerent sometimes. And this is where that professionalism comes in, and that's why we think that wage is just a little bit too low relative to some of the other entry-level positions. We value our people.
Market.
And as far from the last increase was, this, if I remember right, it was the start of 2017. We did a 75 cent per hour adjustment at that point. In 2018 did not have an adjustment for the entry level wage for the driver. The drivers are on a standard step scale to where they get a 25 cent an hour increase when they finish a year of service, each year of service. So there's a standard increase built into that, the way it's currently structured.
Is it only drivers that you're short on? The other positions, are there other positions within the district that you are also having a hard time filling?
Staffing.
Yeah, with staffing.
But this would affect the vehicle cleaners as well.
Yeah, service workers, we periodically have trouble filling that position. We tend to cycle through them pretty fast, just because it's a less than ideal position, and most people, you know, after 6-8 months, a year, they get kind of tired of cleaning up, throw up, or something else out of there, smelling gas fumes. And
they are really denied.
So it's designed to be a rotation through position. Recently, we've been okay filling those, but there have been times in the past where we've been short 2 to 3 service workers. It puts a little strain on. So, you know, that puts them there cleaning the few that remain, but puts them there cleaning the buses. Was it just a month or two ago, we had one person in all the buses?
It cycles.
So, I mean, that it's that entry-level place that we run into challenges periodically. That's what we're facing this year.
Given the unemployment rate, maybe Dean has an excellent point. Maybe that $200,000, we need to talk a range depending on what if. We may be under budgeted if we... If we have buses sitting idle because no one can drive them.
So far, we haven't missed service. So
yeah,
that's a good job for Jody and the drivers that step up.
Curtis, I would like to say you guys are doing great on this. You guys are headed in the right direction. And I would encourage you guys to continue to look, to fine tune, as you were talking about. Look at maybe making adjustments and benefits as needed. You guys are smart. You've made some great decisions so far. Feel like it sounds to me like your budget is on the right track, and we'll have some more conversations over the next few months.
So was this, we still do a zero budget? We start off with zero and work way up?
That's right.
Was this prepared on a zero budget?
Yeah, so basically what we do is when we start out, each person with budgetary responsibility is given their worksheet with absolutely nothing in it from the prior year. That we call a zero-based budget, and then every single line has to be built up by that department head. Now, sometimes they'll reference their previous year's budget to see how much it costs, to see is it something that continues to go on. For example, in mine, we have to have a financial statement audit every year. I know about how much that's going to cost, so I can bring that line and bring it right in. And while it was there in the previous year, my current year starts at zero, and I have to bring it in and justify, yes, we have to have a financial statement audit. When it comes to something else, such as marketing efforts, we evaluate some of those. What did we do in the past? And the person who develops that budget has to come in to our committee and say, this is what I'm planning to do, and this is why I'm requesting this much money. So that works for every single line that we go through, except for salaries and wages. Salaries and wages, we always start with where we currently stand on our salary schedule, how much are we incurring based off of the current staffing levels, and then we start making decisions. Now we've evaluated this all the way through the year, but when it comes to the final budgeting process, that's when we come back through and say, is there something we could be doing different? Are there better ways to do this? Should we be staffing different? Should we be moving more to part-time from full-time, or should we be moving more full-time from part-time? And so all of those decisions get debated over the course of about 2 months. So when you talk about this budget process, stepping it up, we actually started having budget discussions way back in June and started identifying where were some critical issues, which is why back in June, as Todd's referenced in his letter that went out, we started identifying we've got a wage issue. And we started trying to bring that forward because it became apparent right there. Now we're into halfway through September, and it's starting to really put a strain on us. But we do start with a zero-based budget.
I just got one more question on this raise. How's that going to affect the morale of those that don't get that raise? And that's a 16.7% increase in wages. What about all the other employees? Are they going to feel left out? Are they going to be disgruntled? Or?
And that's where we come back through, and we've done a really, I got to compliment Nicole. Nicole's done a fantastic job meeting with a lot of the employees and explain to them, for their position, what is their market range? So we'll take and meet with a mechanic and talk to them. Okay, we've done the market analysis. This is what the pay range is for your position. So yeah, somebody else may be getting a raise, but your position, here's where you stand in the market. Now, every once in a while, and you'll notice we've allocated $160,000 to benefits and some wage adjustments, because we do have a couple people that are on the lower end of market or even the low market, where we're sitting down and saying, hey, these are ones that they need to adjust as well to keep with the board's policy, which you've given us, is to keep people inside the market. And so each one of those, Nicole meets with and talks with, we have a chance to meet with it, and we set the expectation really pretty well with those employees about this is where your market range is, and this is how you fit, and this is where I say dispatch is the closest to the drivers, and that one we can, as we adjust this wage, we're going to have some areas there that we've got to consider and see to make sure that we've got enough distance between driving and dispatch, because they're two different functions, and they function they just function differently. They have different responsibilities, but dispatchers are an evaluated position. They're not a driving position, which is just you keep going up. A seniority-based system, I should say.
Anything else? Thanks, Curtis.
Thank you.
I think it's been good starting the budget earlier and getting more, you know, comments on it.
Just by way of setting expectations, we're really trying to do this better. In order to get our insurance in the timeline that we're talking, we need to have a preliminary decision from this board in October, because we actually have to sign an insurance contract and open it up to our employees so they can go through an open enrollment period in November. So we'll be coming back in October with our final presentation on benefits, and we want to be discussing, you know, are the level, do we keep the level? We'll bring a proposal of where we have the benefits, and then we'll be looking for, you know, do we keep that level that we're proposing, or is there something different so we can get a finalization on that contract for our employees' insurance. So that'll be a fun discussion in October.
Thank you. And thanks, Glenn, for your report. Just a few minutes or a little bit on that marketing, coming from a marketing office, it really is necessary that we spend that money to market it. We've got, the office I came from had, I think we had four or five people that did nothing but market for the university, and there were so many areas to go into, students, ages, backgrounds, parents, I mean, and I don't think one person could just sit down and do that by themselves. It's a real job that I think CDTD is smart to hire out.
I think so too. My question is, what will be your return?
Very much.
Because if it's just to make people like us, we can buy a lot of cookies for that. Mm-hmm. Plus some more.
Yeah, I think it's more to find out what they want.
You know, we need to increase the writers. You know.
Yeah.
The only thing I would suggest on that is that sometimes marketing takes a little longer than you know, like we don't want to see when we talk about return on investment, sometimes it takes not a day or two or three, it can take 6 months to a year to see the effect of what we do to get to reach out to the community.
I just think hearing them will give us all a better idea of where those dollars will be targeted.
But it was, when I got into that office, I was surprised how complicated it was.
Oh, it's very complicated.
It was overwhelming. So anyway, thank you for all your input. We'll move on to Todd, the consideration for adoption of wages.
So we've talked that a lot. Again, any questions you have, I'm happy to talk through. But really what we're asking for tonight is for you to consider adopting a $2 an hour increase at that entry level and an additional full-time benefited in driver's position. So again, if there's further questions, but we're actually asking if you would consider that.
Was
So you want $2 for both the part-time and the full-time is what you're
saying? Correct. I mean, this is a vehicle operator position. The wage is the same. One's benefited, one's not.
But we're not going to change the insurance policy. I think we're just going to add two more.
Currently in this year's budget, that is correct. Again, as Curtis pointed out, in the next year's budget, which we're going to be talking about, there may be a change, there may not be. That's really going to be something that this board will ultimately determine.
Someone like to make a motion?
A motion that we accept the $2 increase as described and discussed.
And also four times the position
for the driver's and the
just to clarify, this is you're proposing that it be implemented as soon as possible.
I'm sorry.
Waiting until the first of the year.
Yeah,
I just want to make sure that there's not a confusion about that.
That's what
Todd's part of the presentation is, not mine.
Yeah.
So then our budget would then be changed to reflect whatever the board decides to make an immediate adoption.
Thank you for that clarification.
Just to clarify, we anticipate, because we suspended certain programs, we didn't start the incentive as early as we wanted to. That's why we have some extra funds in the current year's budget that could absorb these adjustments. So we're anticipating that we wouldn't need a budget amendment because there's enough flexibility in the current budget as it stands, but we would not do this without board authorization.
That's why you let the finance guy do the financing.
Right? So the motion includes making it active immediately now.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Okay. Any questions? Any other comments?
What's your motion?
That we accept the $2 an hour increase for the part-time and full-time drivers plus the bus cleaners, and it comes effective now.
And an
additional four full-time bus drivers.
Okay.
And then I second it.
Anyone opposed, or anyone in favor? Is everyone in favor?
No,
any ayes?
Aye.
Any opposed? Norm? Okay. Okay, then. I guess I'll do the chair report. November 14th will be our board meeting. We'll have the October one, but for November will be the 14th to get it before Thanksgiving. And December 12th will be the board meeting. And then we're changing things up a little bit. The social is going to be December 15th, not with the board meeting. And it's going to be noon at the Bluebird. And then after the social, we're giving everyone a ticket for themselves and take someone along to the Bar J Wranglers instead of the gift bags and stuff. So anyway, and then in October we'll be voting for a vice chair. So be thinking about who you think would work for that. So,
yeah. Just clarification on the November and December meetings. November we pass a tentative budget. December we pass a budget. So we need a quorum. So that's why we're giving you the dates now. Make sure you're in attendance.
Yeah.
And the Bar J Wranglers is at 1:30,
yeah.
So we'll eat at noon, and then we'll go over to the Bar J Wranglers at 1:30.
Will you give us those dates one more time? I apologize.
Okay, November 14th for November, and December 12th.
Both at BATC?
Yes.
Yes.
And then December 15th is the social at noon, and then 1:30 for Bar J Wranglers.
So December 12th is the board meeting?
Uh-huh.
We'll remind you again, but we just want to make sure.
We got to be there. Okay. Do you have anything else?
I do. I actually have something.
Okay, good.
So, a couple items for you. You may recall a couple meetings ago, we had one of our Colorado passengers, Stephen Danes, come and talk to the board. I just want to give you a little information. Stephen violated our conduct policy. And so we brought him in and explained to him the violations, and we write it all out. Jody met with him along with another staff member, spent a significant amount of time with him explaining all of that. We explained to him that Further violations would result in him being required to have an attendant schedule his rides and attendant on the bus with him for his rides. So again, our goal is to keep him using the service. That's what we're trying to do. He has violated the conduct policy again. And so they met with him again today and informed him of that in writing again. And so at this point, Stephen can no longer use the service unless an attendant schedules his trips or unless an attendant rides with him. So he may contact you. That's the reason I wanted to inform you. He may contact you about that. I just want you to be informed. Again, he can ride the service. His riding privileges have not been suspended. However, he does have to have an attendant schedule for him, and he has to have an attendant on the bus, just so you're aware of that. Any questions? Okay. Also, I just wanted to...
Can I just add one thing on that?
Please.
If he does contact you right now where things are at, he needs to have a representative contact Curtis initially. So if you could please just refer him to Curtis, or his representative to Curtis, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thanks. So one of the things that my job requires is that I'm actively involved with the legislative aspects of things. And so the legislature every year, they create various task force that during the summer is really kind of when the task force meets. For the past couple of years, they've created what they call a transportation task force. And they're looking at transportation issues across the state. This year, they've also created another task force. It's a sub-task force, the transportation task force. And that's the tax task force. And really what the tax task force has been assigned to do is to look at the various funding mechanisms for roads, transit, active transportation. They're referred to as the corridors. And they're not all corridors, but that's how they're referred. And the goal is to try and simplify that. We've met twice as a task force, and I sit with that group. We've met twice, and we found that it's a lot more complex than what we thought. But at the first task force meeting, the first tax task force meeting, the Senator Wayne Harper, who is the chair, shared some information that was. What he said was that the Cache Valley Transit District is not in need of any additional funding because they have $4 million sitting in their fund balance and they have $1 million in surplus going to the bottom line. And so they're not in need of any additional funding. At the time the meeting was going on, I just said, hey, that's not the full picture. I would really like to meet with you at some point and try to give you more information. And so he graciously agreed. This last week we had another meeting, and that's when he had agreed to meet with me. And so I sat down with him and explained to him that we need to go back a little bit. And I think I need to go back with this board a little bit because some of you weren't around when a lot of these decisions were made. So back in 2009, the board had been working with staff. When our facility was created in 1998, when it was built, it was designed to be a 20-year facility. So if you go 20 years, that's 2018. That was what it was designed when they looked at the long-range plans, projections, that's what they felt. So in our planning effort, back in 2009, the board said, we need to start looking for where would we build another facility. And we looked at the time, could we buy property to the south of our current facility, and we approached Logan City, and they said, no, we have that property for our thing, and so we really didn't have an option to expand there. So we looked at 15 different sites, and some of the board members were involved in that, but ultimately the board was involved in making the decision to purchase the property that we have in North Logan, which we purchased in 2010. So the board has to authorize the purchase of property. So the board authorized that, and they said, look, we need this property for future expansion. Ever since then, the board is also, every year, and those of you who've been here around for a while, you're like, yeah, we do this every year. Every year we approach you and we say, here's the fund balance, here's what we're proposing, that we put the fund balance, and it's really set aside for two things. It's set aside for the future facility. We're slowly putting money away to build that future facility, and it's set aside for bus replacement. We have to have local match for our grants. You know, we have to come up with 20% for that. And so we're putting money aside to replace buses. We have that bus schedule, planned said in 2022, we currently don't have any federal money to replace five buses that need to be replaced. So right now, we're planning on that we have to replace that 100% with our local money, which is $2.5 million. So that $4 million that's out there, $2.5 million of it right now is just earmarked to replace buses. Now we're hoping, and we work very hard, we're hoping that we can line up some federal money that we only have to come in 20%. So as I'm talking with Senator Harper about that, I'm saying, I want to give you some context. And he's like, wow, that's not how it was portrayed to me. I also explained, you know, we haven't bonded to build that facility. I mean, that's an option, but we've chosen to kind of the Cache Valley way is you try to be a little bit more conservative and you try to pay for that. So that facility, you know, it's going to cost probably $15 to $25 million. I mean, and we can do it in phases. And so those are things that we're looking at. But I just bring that up as a point that and Senator Harper was really good, actually. I gave him that information. We actually, you know, presented a document to him and I said, look, you can go and look at our audit financials. You can see this. He's correct in that the last 2 years we did put $1 million to the fund balance. But if you look at other years, there's years that we dipped out of that fund balance to replace buses. We didn't put any money, we took money. And we may be taking money here this next year or in future years. I mean, that's just part of the bus replacement cycle thing. So I just wanted to educate you that information was given that way. I think we've corrected some of that, but just wanted to make you aware of that.
So did the senator take his words back then about leaving any money?
Well, that wasn't his words, but let's be very clear. He was repeating what he had been told.
Well, I know, but he understood that he's not going to do that.
We actually walked into the tax meeting and because of what he had said previously, he had been informed. He was very gracious and said, hey, I need to correct some things. And again, I'm not saying that he took our word 100%. He just said, I've been given some additional information. I think further discussion needs to happen. We need to look at these things. But he said, given this context, it probably is something we need to look at. So I think it's very important that if you hear information, make sure, you know, if you have questions, send people to us, or by all means, you know, correct the information. But that $4 million is kind of earmarked, and you guys will set that at the end of the next budget. Questions on that?
I have a question. You said it was in 2010. I'm just wondering where the property is, and are you just planning to make it like another base where you park the buses at night, or another transit center?
Great question. So thank you for asking. So the property is out in North Logan, just east of the airport. It's about 3100 North. And so one of the things that we found in our research is we're probably one of a handful, literally maybe four or five locations in the country with a climate as cold as ours in the winter that's not internally housing their buses. So what we would do is we would actually build that facility. It would become the storage, maintenance, administration, and then we would actually dispose of or sell our current property. We wouldn't need both of them. And that funding could go to you know, help with that or other purchases. We were just in Flagstaff, as Curtis has referenced, and they just built an interior facility, a year ago, it seems like. But they've already seen a drastic change in the ability to maintain the fleet. Just because what you do is you build that storage and then you maintain it about 45 degrees in the winter. Summer is the summer, but it helps so that it's not the extreme cold. And not having the no starts, you know, where things aren't operating. So that's the goal. That's what we're trying to do. Great question. Any other questions?
Has that building been approved by the board officially, or just the land buy-in and stuff? It hasn't been motioned and approved to do it, has it? Or was it just in general, what's the goal and just discussing?
Yeah, so the board approved the purchase of the land with the intent to build it. But yes, we haven't come back with this is the design, we've done preliminary plans, but yeah.
So it's not set in stone that we're gonna put them all inside. I disagree on
sure.
Those things.
No, when that time comes, there will be lots of discussion opportunity for sure. One other thing from that meeting that I just want to inform the board about. So Lincoln Schertz is, he works for the Association of Counties. He's their lobbyist. And Lincoln has shared in that meeting numerous times, but again, this last time, that Cache County is planning on approaching the legislature, and they're trying to do it this session, whether or not they can get that done. But to change, if you remember, in May, they passed the tax. And of that tax, 40% would come to transit, 40% to the city, and 20% to the county. They're wanting to implement the Draxler bill, which they ran a year ago. At the time, I don't think they anticipated that they would go from a third class to a second class county. So they're going to be going to a second class county. The Draxler bill only applied to third class and higher. So because of the population growth, that bill does not apply. So currently, we would get 40%. Their intention is to have the Draxler bill apply so that we don't get 10% of that funding that they passed. So again, I just want to give you information. That's what's going on as far as the county. I think their intentions. Lincoln was very, very open about that. So I just want to make you aware of that. Any questions?
Todd, I'm sure it's early days in these discussions, but what's the vibe like from these work groups here?
As far as
the Draxler bill, too early to say.
I will say I think initially Senator Harper, who's the chair of this task force and has done a lot with regards to the transportation bills in the past. He's really kind of pushed a lot of these bills through that you've seen over the past years. You know, the bill that actually said 40% for transit, 40% for cities, 20% for the county, he's kind of the one that pushed that. And one of the big discussions around that is they're saying, look, we recognize the Wasatch Front, we can't build more roads. We can't continue just to fund roads. We've got to fund transit. And so when you look at their long-range plan, it's kind of funny to me. So they now, down in Utah County, the BRT from Utah Valley to BYU for 3 years is going to be zero fare because they want people to use it. They need people to get out of their cars. That congestion's insane. The long-range plan for Salt Lake, so from Davis County to Utah County, is zero fare on Front Runner, zero fare on a lot of tracks lines because they need people to get out of their cars. They can't build more roads. UDOT is 100% behind this. UDOT, the MPOs, the Metropolitan Planning Organizations are saying this needs to happen. When they run their models, it's the only way to really make it viable. So when Senator Harper was saying, you know, well, CBT doesn't need this money because of this, I think he was kind of thinking, this is a Wasatch Front issue. We don't really need to work beyond the Wasatch Front. This isn't just Cache County, too, that's dealing with this. Washington County is really dealing with some huge growth and huge impacts, and their county's not passing the tax. So the bill allows that next year the cities can pass the tax. And they've got cities lined up saying, we're going to pass it. So what you see is that I think Senator Harper has recognized now, he's going, this is really a problem for the state. This isn't just a Wasatch Front issue. And so he's saying, well, maybe people need to understand that transit does have to be a long-term option. It can't just be roads. So when you say, what's the likelihood? I don't know. I do think the important thing is that we get information. At the end of the day, politics are politics, and I don't know how to project that. I just want to make sure that people that are making decisions have good information. And I think sometimes that's not always been the case. I want to make sure we're giving a full picture. But Norm's right. I mean, we all have different opinions on what that is. And I think that's what politics is, right? We all can have different opinions. And that's really what I wanted to do, was just share with you what has been done in the past, the decisions that have been made. Are they the right decisions? I don't know. You know, we'll give you our professional recommendation, but at the end of the day, that's what makes our country great, is we have discussion, we have political leaders that are you know, elected to make decisions. This board has been appointed. You're not elected, but you've been appointed to make some decisions. I know that paying wages and paying benefits, those are tough decisions, you know, and so we appreciate that you're willing to come and participate and tackle this, so thank you for that. I don't know how to project the political outcome, but I do think it's important. Where you can, please share information with people. I think that's all I got.
Is that it? Any more comments or questions? Make sure if you've got some budget questions, to email those to Todd and to Curtis for next time. And I think we're done. have a motion to adjourn?
I just want to say.